Even though this team's been struggling all year, we know that they get off to a fast start at home. It definitely started with our attention to detail. We was in tune with the game plan, and it allowed us to get this win. Playing at all three facets and more, and I was able to get a charge as well. Pick up a couple blocks, a couple steals, just being around the court and being reliable to my teammates. You know, for me to be able to clean glass and get my guys good looks, where they able to just catch a shoot or catch and lay it up, make it a lot easier for me. With the scoring, I just try to be aggressive, and I got to the free throw line tonight and was able to knock those down too.
$35 guaranteed, richest deal for an offensive lineman in history, and the hole that the Giants plug has created a hole in Houston and created a hole in New England. They're getting a left tackle, which is something that they needed. And here's the thing. A lot of people in New York thought that the Giants were going to get Andrew Norwell to help solidify the offensive line. In fact, there were people who thought that the Giants would go out and get Norwell and Solder. And they lost Norwell to Jacksonville on Tuesday. So the Giants had to have Nate Solder play on their offensive line. Now you wonder what the Patriots will do. Finding good offensive linemen is one of the biggest challenges in the league to these teams. There just aren't enough good offensive linemen. Everybody wants decisions on these players right now because we saw so much activity this week. But the fact of the matter is, some of these things take time to percolate. Because we see so many moves with so many teams, people want immediate answers. The Browns are in a situation where they're sitting there at one, and their job, their stead, is to go find a quarterback. And they've gotten cute with too many quarterbacks. And Saquon Barkley is a generational talent, maybe the best player in this draft. But we've got a situation here where the Cleveland Browns have to go find a quarterback. You can't get cute and bypass a quarterback at one and say, well, we'll take the best one remaining at four.
When you take away a guy like Jordy Nelson, which is how you can get a guy like Jimmy Graham, he better bring some similar skill sets. And I know people say, well, it's a tight end and a wide receiver. But what they both are is they're both very productive red zone type of receivers. And you can see down there, teams know that you're going to them by formation and the way you put them out there, and they can't stop him. So it's going to give Aaron another weapon to continue his proficiency as far as throwing touchdown passes in the red area.
It gives the Vikings a strong arm, experienced quarterback who, with that surrounding cast, probably should do better than he did in Washington. There are higher expectations in Minnesota, and of course with the money comes high expectations as well. This guy's a quarterback. It's certainly possible, in fact it's likely, if this is in fact guaranteed for skill and injury, we'll be asking for this for virtually every big time quarterback who comes up. Not only the money, but the guarantee. Will it spill over into other positions? I kind of doubt it, because let's face it, the injury rate in football is 100%.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed the extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Thanks so much for joining us. We are Toledo's sports leader. And, yeah, buddy, it's almost time. You know, we said yesterday, Jim, the free agency started at 3 o'clock at the start of our show. Now it happens in the middle of our show, actually. The league year begins at 4 o'clock this afternoon, so we are, what am I, counting it down, 49 minutes away.
Yep.
From Kirk Cousins signing the first three-year guaranteed contract for $84 million in the history of the league. We are just 49 minutes away from Case Keenum signing in Denver. We are 49 minutes away from a couple of new offensive tackles signing with the Cleveland Browns. We are 49 minutes away from a whole bunch of trades being consummated. Deals were agreed to in the last several days, of course, but nothing could be finalized until today. So, who have been rumored to have been coming to Cleveland, and I continue to focus on them because they've been the most active. Tyrod Taylor coming over from Buffalo. Obviously, Jarvis Landry from Miami. There's all kinds of, things that have been reported. Deals that have been agreed to, and this can all finally be consummated starting now at 48 minutes from now. So we have a lot of NFL to talk about today right here on The Tick. As a matter of fact, our guest list kind of reflects that. We're going to go to Cleveland and to Detroit, to the east and then to the north, to talk about some of these moves that are reported to have been made or agreed upon, and those that are rumored that possibly might actually be agreed upon. And so we're going to go east and talk to Maniloff, Dennis Maniloff, about all of the things the Browns are doing on this crazy day. We'll get to Joe Thomas in a second. And then coming up at 4:10 roughly, Jeremy Reisman, Pride of the D, prideofdetroit.com, will be joining us to talk about the Lions in free agency and what kinds of moves they might make, what they are expected to make. Very much looking forward to both those conversations. Also, obviously, the play-in games started yesterday. St. Bonaventure upsetting UCLA. Well, I don't know if it's an upset. It's a play-in game. It was hilarious to me. Kush, again, I don't know how much as you get up in the mornings and get prepared for our program and do all of the work that you do, you get a chance to listen to Golic and Wingo in the morning. But it was so funny because Chris Canty has been in for Golic over the last three days, starting on Monday. Chris Canty has been in for Golic, and they were talking about last night and play-in games. And every time Chris Canty referenced play-in games, Trey Wingo almost had, like, you know, an on-air conniption. It's like, no, stop. First four. We've got to call them the first four. Almost as if they have been instructed per the terms maybe of, like, the broadcast agreements. I don't know because I don't even know what networks the games were on last night. Did you watch either of the play-in games last night, Jim?
I tuned in a little bit for one of them. Those were on the True TV. This is that couple of days where that's the only time I'll ever turn that channel on.
Okay, so it wasn't on ESPN anyway. But to hear Golic react the way he did today, he said, "No, you know they're very sensitive about that. We can't call them play-in games, especially because if you look at the results of the games last night." It was what they're calling for Radford, the first ever tournament victory, their first NCAA tournament appearance and their first victory. They beat LIU Brooklyn, 71-61. The Radford Highlanders, won. And so they're saying this is their first tournament win. So you can't call it a play-in game. It's got to be a part of the tournament. And so it's the first four. I will never be okay with this. I will never, ever in my life be okay with calling the first round of the tournament this first round of the tournament. The first round starts Thursday, and it continues Friday. The second round is Saturday, and it continues Sunday. If this was the first round, we would have second rounds Thursday and Friday, and third rounds Saturday and Sunday. We went through this garbage 2 years ago.
Yep. No, you're hitting on it because there was that block of time where they were calling the first four the first round, and now they're trying to say, make sure you say first four because they were upsetting too many of us because a 1-16 matchup on a Thursday was suddenly a second round game.
Exactly.
And that's just wrong.
And it's just stupid. And to be honest with you, the whole concept of playing these play-in games is stupid. The tournament is 64 teams strong. That's it. These other eight teams are not in the tournament. Bottom line, LIU and Radford were not in the tournament last night. Radford now is in the tournament. They played their way in. They are now on an actual line in the 64-team field. That's just the fact. That's the way that it is. UCLA and St. Bonaventure were not in the tournament last night. They played a game to get into the tournament. Bonaventure now is in the tournament. And that's just it. And tonight, the two games that are going to be held tonight, and who do we have? We got, for goodness sakes, I don't even have
it. It'll be North Carolina Central, Texas Southern first, then Syracuse, Arizona State.
Thank you. Okay, so Texas Southern, North Carolina, or North Carolina Central, and then Syracuse, Arizona State. None of those four teams are in the tournament. They are fighting. The tournament is not 72 teams strong. They don't have a 72-team bracket. That's just a fact. And all of this crap, you know what it reminds me of, Jim? It just reminds me of political correctness, and everybody gets a gosh daggone medal. Oh, I was there, too. I participated in something that was sort of kind of like leading into the tournament, therefore call this a tournament game. No. Radford? You're still 0-0 in the tournament. You've never done it.
Actually, they're 0-2. They've had two previous appearances.
Did? I thought I heard them say this morning.
No, that was their first.
Radford's first appearance.
That part, their first win. That part is wrong.
Okay.
It's their third.
And you want to know how many blanks I give about that? Zero. Because you're not in the tournament this year yet. Until now, you will play in the tournament in your first. And by the way, Chris, I think it was Canty, right, made the point that I think a lot of people have made. if you're not even one of the top 64 teams in the field, right, and they make you play an extra game just to get in, how are you not automatically on the 16 line? How are you not automatically? Now, Bonaventure is. St. Bonaventure is, right? They're the ones. Or is it Rafe? No, I'm sorry. The other way. Radford.
Now they're on the 16 line.
Goes in on a 16 line after winning their play-in game to get into the bracket for the first time, which is, again, another reason why you can't call that any kind of, you know, part of the tournament. But Radford is on a 16 line, and they're going to play Villanova and get crushed. That's the way it ought to be. How is St. Bonaventure going in on the 11 line against Florida? How are they the 11th seed? That means they are better thought of by the committee than the 12, the 13, the 14, the 15, and the 16 in that region. Moreover, they are thought of as better than the 12, 13, 14, 15, and 16 seeds in any of the regions. So if St. Bonaventure now, just, you know, as an example, if St. Bonaventure now is considered to be an 11 seed, anybody ranked below them, 12 through 16 in all four. So help me out. 1, 2, 14, 15. That's five teams. That's 20 teams. Five teams that are 12 through 16 in all four brackets. Five times four is 20 teams. 20 teams are considered to be worse than St. Bonaventure, which goes in on an 11 line against Florida in the first round coming up Thursday. How, if they are better than 20 teams, how come they had to play an extra game? How come they had to play another game just to get in there? How come if they want to be national champions, they have to win seven games in the postseason? One to get into the tournament and then six to actually win in the tournament. Somebody explain that to me, Kush.
Well, when I look at this, I've never really liked this round to begin with.
It's a dumb idea.
My first problem with it, honestly, has always been how they've split it up. The way they view it is there's eight total teams in these 2 days, right?
Yeah.
Four of them are the quote-unquote bottom four automatic qualifiers. That's your Radfords, your LIU Brooklyns.
Yeah.
The other four are your last four in on your bubble from at large, and that was the St. Bonaventure UCLA, for example.
And if they're if they're the last four in, how come they automatically take precedence over 20 other teams?
I've honestly never had much of a problem with the seeding of, like, say, a St. Bonaventure UCLA.
But why? I mean, explain to me then.
Because these are the bottom at larges, and if you're at that cut line, You should have to play an extra game. In fact, the thing Hold on, wait a minute.
No, you're not answering the question. How should they have to play an extra game? If they win that extra game, they automatically get bumped to the 11 spot, better seeded than, again, all of the 12 through 16s that are in already in all four of the regions. I don't understand how that makes you know one of the last at large teams in. If you were better than 20 other teams, as it turns out, then you shouldn't have been one of the last at large teams in.
Fair enough. My thing I was trying to say was I've never liked the fact that the Radfords of the world have to do this extra game. I thought by winning your conference, even if it's conference tournament stuff,
you're in.
Done.
In the field of 64.
Yes,
that's it.
Exactly. You already did what you're supposed to do. If you're going to have these games, all four of them should be for your bottom at-large bubble teams to play-in games. I don't want to have them anyway because, you know, just do your simple math. There are 32 conferences. Remember, they put this first four in because they wanted to get more at-larges. Because, you know, we need more 19 and 15 Alabamas.
Exactly.
And 19 and 14 Texas.
That's what makes it a freaking joke.
But
and that's why the NCAA can go pound salt up their brackets, as far as I'm concerned. This is ridiculous. The idea that they need more of those 19 and 15 teams in is ridiculous on its face. The idea that they can't call this the first round because they realized how stupid it was to call it the second round, on Thursday
and Friday.
Tomorrow and Friday. Right, exactly. The fact that they can't do that, but they can't call it play-in because that's insulting to the teams that are, you know, hey, we made the tournament, won our first tournament game, Radford, woo!
Can't they just call it the opening round like they did in the late 70s, early 80s? And look it up. That's what they called it. There were play-in games before they expanded to 64.
They can't call it anything. They can't call it anything because those teams are not in the God-blasted tournament. Those teams are playing for the right to enter the Field of 64-team tournament. That's it, and that's what makes it stupid. It's a money grab, as you say, a chance to get more big-name schools from bigger conferences who had mediocre seasons into those lines, and it makes no sense. And I will again submit to you that if they're going to make anybody who plays a first four game, a play-in game, an 11 seed, putting them over 20 other teams, then they should not have been on in the play-in game in the first place. They should have been seated there in the first place. The only thing they should have, if they're going to have these ridiculous, pointless, senseless, money-grabbing opportunity first four games in the first place, would be the teams that are going to be automatic 16s. Whoever wins those four games are going to be the 16 teams that are thrown to the lions, if you will, against the number ones.
I will say
exactly how it ought to be.
I will say that on the only level I 100% agree with making them all 16s is if you did that, just hypothetically, we might finally get to see a 16 beat a 1, just saying.
I want to sit
good.
In a room with
then
these a-holes.
Then it feels good. I would rather have that 16 be a Radford type, not a St. Bonaventure actually doing it.
I want to be in a room with these idiots. I really do. I want to be in the room with every one of these committee members who decided to add 72 teams to put 70. There's 64 God-blasted teams in it already. And that's not enough. We need more revenue. We need more games. We need more piece of crap middle of the pack finishers and power conferences to be able to get in and play another game. And it's just the dumbest thing ever. They kill the integrity of competition. The seeding makes no sense whatsoever when you stick somebody in a extra game that they have to play just to get in, and then you put them on the 11 line, better than 12s, 13s, 14s, 15s, and 16s who are already in the tournament. It just does not compute. I would love to be in a room with these people, and I would love for there to be a lock on the door, and I would love for there to be no cameras there, because I think we would come out with a very, very different scenario, and I would enforce my will. All right, welcome once again to the extravaganza. I just cannot stand this ridiculous start to the tournament. Just play 64 teams the way it ought to be, and quite frankly, if you really must have more revenue, then double the God-blasted thing and put 128 teams in and then let teams like Toledo play in the tournament. Have seven rounds instead of six rounds. Have no play-in games, just a top 128 go in. If you really want to do that, Kush, would you rather do that or keep with this nonsense about, well, here's the last four. Oh, I'm sorry. They're the last four at-larges in playing against some automatic qualifiers from tiny conferences. But it really is insulting to say last four. That's not politically correct. We don't make them feel good as if they've accomplished something. This, we'll call them the first four, and we'll juxtapose it against the final four. Look how cute we all are. Now let's go play hopscotch at recess, you freaking sniveling little babies.
I just wish they'd go back to the 64, you know. Everything was fine until they decided to expand with this extra little round. I mean, because again, you know, 32 isn't enough at larges, because I'm pretty sure with some of the quote unquote bubbles and snubs we've all seen out of the last couple of years, I think 32 at larges is just fine. Because that's
too.
What it comes out to. There's 32 conferences, so half the field is automatic qualifiers, half the field. I mean, it actually makes symmetrical sense now to keep it at 64.
Although I will say, like I said, I really, well, of course it does. Symmetry, you have to have that number. And that's why, in order to make this any better.
No, I'm saying on the breakdown that it's literally 32 conferences, so 32 or auto bids and 32 at-larges.
Exactly. It really does. It makes it perfectly that way. But I wouldn't even have a problem if they did want to go to 128, like I said. And if it's a revenue reason, or just, you know, an opportunity to get more of the big names in from the middle of the pack of the big conferences, or maybe a second team in from a MAC, those kinds of things, to give them an opportunity to play, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Everybody gets Monday off, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, just like they are with these play-in games, and then, you know, have the first round be there, and then the round of 64. You're already down from 128 to 64 after 2 days. Then, of course, you start your regular 64 on Thursday, Friday. If they want to do that, I'm okay. I won't kill that idea. It is a little extreme to think 128 teams deserve to be playing for the national championship. I forget which ESPN talking head it was, Jim, who you played a couple of days ago, who pointed out that, you know, we can't really call this a national championship tournament because a national championship tournament would include all of the best teams in the nation in it. And clearly, this field doesn't have all of the best teams in the nation because it's got auto bid qualifiers from small conferences who are just simply not among the best teams in the nation.
See, now
the
that
best teams in their conference, and therefore. So if they want to say best teams in the nation plus auto qualifiers from the smaller schools and maybe even a second team from those, then you got to go to 128. If you want to say the real 64 best teams in the country, then you have to eliminate all the qualifiers altogether and just have the committee decide this is based on RPI, BPI, and this, that, and the other metric. These are the 64 best.
And I don't agree with that one, because then what's the point of your conference? Like, say you're the Northeast, the Ohio Valley. Why not just drop down to, you know, Division II? Plus, in a way, and I just happened to randomly come across the video, and so I watched a little bit of it again last night. I thought that entire argument got settled that day in 1989 when Princeton nearly beat Georgetown. I just happened to be watching parts of that again. I came across it in complete randomness last night.
Well, why would you go there as opposed to Cleveland State beating Indiana in 1986?
Or not nearly, but doing it. Because if I remember correctly, and when I was watching, pointed this out, I just have to triple check because I think this was the case. 1989 was the fifth year since they had expanded to 64, and apparently there was a legit question at the time of, as some are suggesting right now, just eliminate those small league auto qualifiers because they can't compete. And it was coming to a head apparently that year. And then Princeton is the 16 nearly and almost should have beaten one Georgetown that day. And that's what silenced that. And right. It's never been brought up again until comments that you just pointed out that we played the other day.
Yeah,
I have literally
exactly
not
right.
heard that since then. So Kush, I thought that was settled.
Kush, it is 3:30. Let's get wild.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents The Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports.
Buffalo Wild Wings, Wild Stat of the Day, having to do not with the NCAA, but with the NBA. Last night, Russell Westbrook, the reigning MVP, recorded triple-double number 100 of his career, 32-12-12 in the Thunder's win over the Hawks. Westbrook now just one of four players all-time with 100-plus career triple-doubles. Oscar Robertson, as you can imagine, leads the way with 181. Magic Johnson, a distant second at 138. Jason Kidd finished his career with 107, and then there's Russ. By the way, if you're keeping score at home, LeBron James had his 69th triple-double last night in the Cavaliers' win over the Phoenix Suns. Speaking of the Cavaliers, we're going to talk a little Cleveland, both Cavaliers, but more importantly, NFL free agency from the Browns' perspective with Dennis Manilow next. We'll go north of the state line to Detroit for Jeremy Reisman, who will talk about the Lions in the very same manner. That'll be at about 4:10, so stay with us. A lot of NFL talk coming up right here on The Ticket.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
You daggone Skippy it is, a little fired up over the NCAA tournament. We'll come back to that a little bit later. First, a question. Need a new roof? $1 down. Need new siding? $1 down. Need new windows? All it takes is, you guessed it, $1 down. Get a new look. Your choice of roof, siding, windows for just $1 down. That's the power of 7 years interest-free. Don't delay. Call WeatherSeal today. Get the roof, the siding, the windows you've always wanted for just $1 down. Call 877-WINDOWS. That's WeatherSeal. Call 877-WINDOWS. Call WeatherSeal today or get online at WeatherSealHomeServices.com.
I just want to say thank you to all the Browns fans out there. It's been an amazing ride for the last 11 years. From the moment I was drafted, you guys had my back. You guys showed me what it was like to be a Clevelander. You guys showed me what it means to be a Cleveland Brown. And for that, I'm forever grateful. Jimmy and Dee, thank you so much for everything that you've done for me and my family. I can't thank you guys enough. My teammates, my coaches, you guys helped me become the player that I was able to be for the last 11 years, and I'll be forever grateful. One last thing, guys. Go Browns!
Joe Thomas, the future Hall of Famer, announcing he is calling it a career after 11 years, 10 of them Pro Bowl years. Obviously, the only one that stopped him was the one in which he was injured this year. Seven all-pro teams. One of the best offensive linemen to ever play the game for one of the worst teams in the history of the game for virtually all 11 years. Talk about unappreciated and unrewarded for all of his efforts. That's just one of the things we want to talk about with our good friend Dennis Mantloff, who joins us now from Cleveland to talk about NFL free agency. The league year starts in 20 minutes. Talk about trades and more. D-Man, good to have you back, my friend. How are you?
Thanks for having me, Bob.
Is Joe Thomas's career destined to go down when one considers these sorts of things as one of the wasted careers, one of the most wasted careers of an all-time talent, maybe in the history of sport, Dennis Mantloff?
I hear what you're saying, Bob, but I'm going to say no. The parallel I've drawn in my head over the last couple of days is I thought, you know, Thomas was probably going to retire given the signals and given the fact that the Browns had signed some O-linemen. I was drawing the parallel to Barry Sanders. You know, your Detroit listeners would get that. You know, Sanders, an all-time great running back. Thomas, an all-time great offensive lineman. Both played for losing teams throughout their careers, never saw the Super Bowl. But I didn't hold Detroit's struggles against Sanders, I'm not holding the Browns' struggles against Thomas. So I don't like to use the word wasted. I mean, he was out there.
Yeah, but Dennis, I want to clarify my remarks there because, in fact, I see it just the opposite way of the way you presented it. I'm not holding Barry's lack of a Super Bowl, or excuse me, the Lions' lack of a Super Bowl against Barry or the Browns' awful performance and record in 11 years against Joe. I'm actually saying the opposite. They deserved so much better. Their efforts were Super Bowl worthy. Their efforts, their performance didn't match the pathetic performance of the team around them. So when I say wasted, I mean here's a Hall of Famer whose Hall of Fame skills were wasted on a team that just didn't have anything else around him. I mean, look at all of the names that he protected from the blind side for all of these years, talking about Joe Thomas. And look at all of the garbage that Barry Sanders was surrounded by in Detroit. I'm not saying that their careers were wasted because they didn't win championships. I'm just saying for everything that they were, and in this case Joe Thomas, everything that he has meant and been, it's wasted that he didn't get to play someplace else. Yeah. It's wasted that he didn't block for all-pro quarterbacks who were winning Super Bowls all the time because that's how good he was.
Yeah, I totally agree when you frame it that way. Thomas, unfortunately for him, you know, didn't have the help. You know, he to me is almost above reproach. I mean, what an amazing talent, but also a person off the field in the locker room, impeccable character. But, you know, you get some of the cynics out there sniping, oh, you know, the Browns didn't win anything with them. They won't, you know, they'll win just as much without them, you know. What a bunch of hooey that is. You know, again, you're telling me that a guy who goes out and does his job as well as Thomas does every day for 11 years, it needs to be held against him.
Every snap, too, by the way. We should throw that in, that whole every snap streak.
Yeah, it was over 10,000 snaps. Listen, just a total pro, you know, and I get, you know, he had Veterans Days off, but guess what? When you're going to the Hall of Fame, you could get Veterans Days off. He was a total pro. In the run up to this announcement today, I thought the only thing that could keep him from retiring is the unfinished team business because he desperately wanted the Browns to be good again while he was playing for them. And he loves the Cleveland Browns. He loves the organization. He loves the city. So I had all along thought, boy, he looks ready for retirement, but there might be that little thing gnawing in him that says, I want to get back in to see this thing through and see this team be good again. But ultimately, I totally understand where he's coming from. I mean, it's just so hard to ramp that back up.
All right, Dennis, let's talk about guys who are going to be in Browns uniforms in 2018 and 2019. I guess they'll play at least a little bit into January as the league calendar goes. But anyway, let's talk about some of the replacements. They signed a couple of tackles yesterday. They're going to take a former Steeler, a guy who has played pretty much all across the line there, started, I think, 40 of his 49 games in Pittsburgh. He's coming over. They've got, obviously, the trades that were just made, Tyrod Taylor, Jarvis Landry, the biggest names, obviously. Randall is going to go from corner to safety. give me your overall impression of the pieces and parts that have been acquired. Well, officially, they will at 4 o'clock. These things can become official, but that have been reported as far as the overhaul of the roster.
I really like what John Dorsey and his staff have done. You know, and obviously, it's the off season. It's the Browns. I get it. You know, cue the cynics. We haven't seen them do anything on the field. They're coming off 0-16, 1-31. I get all that. But I'm just saying that Dorsey did what I believe he needed to do, which is a preemptive strike with those three trades to get some veterans with some credentials and a resume and some victories under their belts, get them in before free agency just in case he got spurned by some of these prospective free agents. And by the way, from what I've read, this free agent class is not, you know, bursting at the seams with talent. So he's sitting there looking at the landscape saying, all right, I've got a 1-31 stigma with the current players. You know, they're looking at this as maybe a toxic waste dump. I better get guys in here via trade. And the only real assets I have to flip, I'm not going to flip my young guys. So the assets are paper picks, you know, draft picks. So I think he did the right thing ahead of free agency to bring in those three guys that you mentioned who have NFL resumes and then come in with free agency and, you know, fill voids. I'm guessing he was tipped off by Thomas. Hey, you know, I'm pretty sure I'm going to retire, so you better do your due diligence on offensive linemen. But I like what Dorsey and his crew have done. And what it shows to me more than anything, Bob, is that John Dorsey and his crew are in charge, all right? And you say, well, of course they are. What's the news there? Well, the news is because we know that Hugh Jackson had this, you know, bat phone channel to Jimmy Haslam while Sashi Brown was here. My feeling is Jackson can think he's got that back channel to Haslam now if he so desires, but the guy running the show, the guy bringing in the personnel, is John Dorsey, and John Dorsey's decisions are going to be final. He may listen to Jackson, but ultimately it's going to be Dorsey's call. And you don't have to look any farther than Tyrod Taylor, because Jackson clearly wanted A.J. McCarron, and Dorsey said, no thanks. I'm going to go get Tyrod Taylor. So it makes me feel good that Brown's personnel decisions are in the hands of Dorsey and not Jackson.
Dennis Maniloff joining us. He covers the Cavaliers and the Browns and the Indians out in Cleveland. But we're talking about the Browns and the free agency slash trade moves that they have made. What does the Tyrod Taylor trade mean about the quarterback draft? Does it change anything at all as far as whether they take the quarterback at 1 or 4? And does it change the person that they will choose at 1 or 4?
I think it does a little bit on the latter. First of all, I believed all along, I obviously do now, that the Browns are going to take their favorite quarterback at number one overall, okay? And especially now that you see Dorsey come in, Carlos Hyde. To me, Saquon Barkley's off the table there. There's really no reason for that if you're the Cleveland Browns. So that takes that out of the mix. But I all along thought, regardless of the hype surrounding Barkley, that the Browns were going to take a quarterback number one overall, the one that John Dorsey and his staff liked the best. Okay, so from the pool of, let's say, the big four, you might want to add Lamar Jackson, make it five. Of the five, what effect does Tyrod Taylor as the bridge to that guy have on that group? And I think it narrows it down to two. I think it narrows it down to Sam Darnold or Josh Allen. Wow. The reason I say that is those are the two least NFL-ready, according to most analysts and some teams as well, you would think. And the reason you don't want the guy who's necessarily ready to go is, why would you have Taylor come in only to be pushed by a guy who's ready to play, who's projected to be ready to play in the fall of 2018? That doesn't make any sense to me. So I'm thinking, do you get Taylor as your one-year bridge with the ETA of your draft pick for 2019, and that fits more toward the Darnold Allen profile than it does toward the Mayfield and Rosen profile, and then Jackson to that extent as well. So I think that it's down to Darnold and Allen. That's just my personal opinion.
Very interesting. I was talking to Scott Petrak earlier this week, longtime Browns beat writer, obviously, does a great job. He seemed to think that Baker Mayfield would be the more likely choice here because he plays more like Tyrod Taylor in that he is not only a passer, but he is a tremendous athlete who can make plays with his feet. Tyrod can run. Baker Mayfield can run. As opposed to the Josh Allen type who would be, you know, the straight drop back, big, tall quarterback who isn't going to do too much with his legs. And his point was that whatever offense Todd Haley builds, he doesn't want to have to build two separate ones, one for a Taylor kind of a you know, player, and then change it when it's time to hand it to a Josh Allen. But when it's time to hand it over, somebody who can do the same things Taylor does would be a Baker Mayfield, and it would kind of just make more sense to have a similar type of player to run the same kind of offense. Thoughts?
I'll buy that to an extent, but here's my concern if I'm the Browns. You bring in, let's say you draft Mayfield, and immediately in camp, you know, Mayfield is pushing Tyrod Taylor because the expectation with Mayfield is he's going to start right away. Nobody, when I hear the evaluations of Baker Mayfield, I don't hear people say, oh, he needs a year. You know, he's raw. He's too young. He hasn't taken enough snaps. Whereas you do hear that with Darnold and you do hear that with Allen, you don't hear it with Mayfield. So he would come here and automatically Tyrod Taylor's looking over his shoulder. And I'm not saying that Taylor's headed to the Hall of Fame. I'm not saying he's a Pro Bowler. But you do Tyrod Taylor wrong, in my opinion, by acquiring him and then telling him, you know what, you're going to have to beat out Baker Mayfield in camp. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but I get what you're saying on that parallel sort of point that Mayfield is more of a, you know, Taylor-type quarterback than Darnold or Allen is.
You dismiss Saquon Barkley now from the conversation because of Carlos Hyde. Is that you, or that's what you think they are doing? I'm looking at Carlos Hyde as, you know, as being a quality, competent running back, but nobody's all pro. And Barkley is, of course, drawing raves at being the best player in the draft, the best athlete in the draft, a surefire, you know, Pro Bowl type player, etc. Is there room for both those guys on the roster, or with Barkley getting spelled and also maybe being used a little bit differently than Carlos Hyde would be?
Yeah, I really don't think so, Bob. I mean, you know, it's my opinion again. I'm not saying I'm thinking this is how the Browns are thinking. You know, they have Duke Johnson. Now you've added Carlos Hyde, and granted, they haven't tied up a bazillion in Carlos Hyde, but you can't just throw around millions of dollars if you're the Browns and then just say that the guy's a disposable piece before he's even played it down for you. You know, if you're going to invest, I just think it's too much of a luxury for the position. The position is too much of a luxury for the Browns. They have to shore up the quarterback spot first and foremost. So that becomes, in my opinion, number one overall. If you were to take Barkley number one overall to add him to Johnson and Hyde, you know, there's only so many carries to go around.
I was thinking fourth more than one. You know, the quarterback's still, well, you know, and then Barkley at four. But your point, you can continue to make that point about Duke Johnson being there too.
I mean, there's only so many touches you can have, you know, on an offense. And I'm not saying you don't draft a guy just because you're worried about his touches. I mean, if you got Barkley, the expectation would be 20, you know, minimum 20 touches a game. And you remember Gordon's got to get his, and Landry's got to get his, and the tight end's got to get theirs. And then what did you bring in Hyde for? As a depth back? You know, so I just think it's too high at one and even four. And I know what you're saying. If he's sitting there at four, maybe you think about it. But to me, I get the quarterback at one, and then I get the best defensive player on the board at four, and I'm comfortable for the remainder of the round.
Two more quick questions, one on free agency, one on the draft. What position is the first one to target in 5 minutes? The league year begins 5 minutes from now. We are counting it down, by the way. What is the first targeted position in free agency? Now that we know that a couple of tackles have already been agreed to, or at least, during the tampering period, and we know about the trades that have been made, where do they go next? Is it wide receiver?
I don't think so, Bob. And I know this runs counter to some of the people around here say, oh, wide receiver, wide receiver, wide receiver.
Well, people are talking Terrell Pryor. A lot of people are saying that should be one of the first things they do is go and bring him back here and put him in the mix with Landry and with Gordon, if Gordon is going to be there. Lord only knows how that goes, but, Coleman and the rest.
Okay, if you're gonna talk to me about a second receiver, a number two, a definitive number two, I'm okay with that. But you hear people say, number one receiver. First of all, I don't know which ones are out there that are number ones. Otherwise, they'd still be with their team. But you have Josh Gordon. As long as you have Gordon on your roster, I get it that he's not dependable. But as long as he's on your roster, he's your number one. So to me, you're looking at a number two. I assume that would be because you've soured on Corey Coleman or you just don't think he's dependable given his health. But in my opinion, if the Browns don't get a receiver, I can live with Gordon, Coleman, and Landry. I'll take my chances there. And I know, again, the cynics, how can you count on Gordon? How can you count on Coleman? Well, you can't, but they're on your roster for a reason, okay? So I'm willing to give them a chance until they're not on the roster. But I would say, you're still looking at defensive line, as depth on defensive line. Obviously, the Joe Thomas hold, they're trying to fill. But I would look at defensive line after I looked at, maybe a skill position shore up somewhere.
Let me ask you one other thing on free agency. It's not really about the Browns. It's about the Kirk Cousins deal that's apparently going to be finalized here in a few minutes, and that is 3 years, $84 million guaranteed. Richest guaranteed contract in the history of the sport for a guy who has never won a playoff game, who is 29 years old, who I understand is the best of the lot in this particular free agent class, but this is something NFL players have been begging for, as you know, to be treated the way the NFL or the NBA and the Major League Baseball players are and to have guaranteed deals. It's always been just a no-go for NFL teams because of the injury problems, and it's impossible to guarantee money if you got no guys might not be able to make it healthy through the length of that contract. Is this a game changer? Is this something that every prominent free agent is going to demand now, of their teams? I want guaranteed contracts or I'm walking?
Well, it should be. Every quarterback for one position should be sending Kirk Cousins thank you notes because of what he has done for the position and how he's played it. But I'll tell you what. It's a gutsy game that he played, the betting on yourself game for several years and not settling for some shorter-term contract when he was at the Redskins and willing to go with that franchise tag. He bet on himself, and he won. He hit the jackpot after betting on himself. So it's easier said than done where you say, I want to follow the Kirk Cousins template. Well, do you really? Are you really willing to risk it and bet on yourself for several years like he did? If you are, then the payoff might be lucrative like he just realized. But if you're not, then, you're going to play it safe and you might not get the payoff he did. But I give Cousins a ton of credit for, in that game, in the NFL game, which is so taxing physically, and you could be out of a job in a blink. To gamble like he did on himself, he deserves a payoff like that.
I don't know if there. I guess my question is: does there need to be a gamble like that now that it's been set? I'm just thinking of the next free agent quarterback and the next guy, who's being sought after. Can he just say, "Look, you don't give me a guaranteed deal, I'm not coming to you. I'm only going to somebody who will give me a 3-year guaranteed deal. It might not be $84 million, but I want my money guaranteed, and not just quarterbacks either, D-man. But Le'Veon Bell, who is, of course, in the middle of another contentious negotiation, going to be tagged again by the Steelers. These guys are going to say, look, I play one more year under the tag. I get my knee blown out. I never get my big contract. So I want my big contract to be guaranteed. I just wonder if this isn't the game changer. You don't have to go through everything Cousins did because Cousins did it for everyone else.
Yeah, it could be. That could very well be the case. He might be, you know, the guy who sees, you know, begins the sea change. But we've said that. I would say we've said it before because this is really historically unprecedented contract. But you keep wondering, is the NFL Players Association ever going to be able to get to the level of, let's say, the MLBPA, you know, where they're able to get so much guaranteed money. And that's always fascinated me that, you know, in baseball where the injury likelihood is far less, than even for, you know, even when you factor in pitchers, baseball, the injury likelihood is so far less than football, and yet baseball contracts are so much more lucrative than football contracts.
Right.
So much more guaranteed money. And I don't blame the football players for looking for theirs. You know, and like you say, the running backs. I mean, my goodness, you talk about shelf lives that are limited. I mean, the running backs, they throw you out of there after 4 years if you've lost a tenth of a second on your 40 times. So, yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how guys do in the wake of the Kirk Cousins precedent.
Dennis Manilov covering the Browns out there in Cleveland. Didn't get a chance to talk about Mr. I Age Like Fine Wine, James. We'll do that the next time around. But, Dennis, thanks for the thoughts on the Browns and all of the moves they made. The league year is now officially underway, D-Man. We'll catch up again soon.
Thanks, Bob.
You got it. 401, let's get a top-of-the-hour local sports center. Come back and go to the north of our state line and into the D. Jeremy Reisman, writer and editor at prideofdetroit.com, will talk to us about the Lions' potential moves in free agency, which, again, has officially begun with the start of the league year just 1.5 minutes ago. That's all coming up in hour number two right here on The Ticket.
Even though this team's been struggling all year, we know that they get off to a fast start at home. It definitely started with our attention to detail. We was in tune with the game plan, and it allowed us to get this win. Playing at all three facets and more. And I was able to get a charge as well, pick up a couple blocks, a couple steals, just being around the court and being reliable to my teammates. You know, for me to be able to clean glass and get my guys good looks where they able to just catch and shoot or catch and lay it up, make it a lot easier for me. With the scoring, I just try to be aggressive, and I got to the free throw line tonight and was able to knock those down too.
You set a career high triple doubles with 13 last year. Tonight, you beat that new career high 14. Some of that has to do with more possessions and the pace of today's NBA, or obviously keeping your body ready.
Just say I'm like fine wine. I get better with age. That's what it says. Yeah, yeah. More possession, my.
He's also going to say.
Who are you talking about? Who are you talking about? I'm getting better with age. That's what it says.
35 guaranteed, richest deal for an offensive lineman in history, and the hole that the Giants plug has created a hole in Houston and created a hole in New England. They're getting a left tackle, which is something that they needed. And here's the thing. A lot of people in New York thought that the Giants were going to get Andrew Norwell to help solidify the offensive line. In fact, there were people who thought that the Giants would go out and get Norwell and Solder. And they lost Norwell to Jacksonville on Tuesday. So the Giants had to have Nate Solder play on their offensive line. Now you wonder what the Patriots will do. Find a good offensive lineman. It's one of the biggest challenges in the league to these teams. There just aren't enough good offensive linemen. Everybody wants decisions on these players right now because we saw so much activity this week. But the fact of the matter is some of these things take time to percolate. Because we see so many moves with so many teams, people want immediate answers. The Browns are in a situation where they're sitting there at one, and their job, their stead, is to go find a quarterback. And they've gotten cute with too many quarterbacks. And Saquon Barkley is a generational talent, maybe the best player in this draft. But we've got a situation here where the Cleveland Browns have to go find a quarterback. You can't get cute and bypass a quarterback at one and say, well, we'll take the best one remaining at four.
When you take away a guy like Jordy Nelson, which is how you can get a guy like Jimmy Graham, he better bring some similar skill sets. And I know people say, well, it's a tight end and a wide receiver. But what they both are is they're both very productive red zone type of receivers. And you can see down there, teams know that you're going to them by formation and the way you put them out there, and they can't stop him. So it's going to give Aaron another weapon to continue his proficiency as far as throwing touchdown passes in the red area.
It gives the Vikings a strong-armed, experienced quarterback who, with that surrounding cast, probably should do better than he did in Washington. There are higher expectations in Minnesota, and of course, with the money comes high expectations as well. This guy's a quarterback. It's certainly possible. In fact, it's likely. If this is in fact guaranteed for skill and injury, we'll be asking for this for virtually every big-time quarterback who comes up. Not only the money, but the guarantee. Will it spill over into other positions? I kind of doubt it, because let's face it, the injury rate in football is 100%.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed it is. Hour number two underway, 15 minutes past 4 o'clock, right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. The league year is now 15 minutes old, and this is what everybody has been waiting for. All kinds of deals have been agreed to. The legal tampering period, of course, is now over. Now teams that have been rumored to come to agreements with free agents can actually legalize those and put names on dotted lines. Now trades that have been proposed and agreed to can be finalized as well and submitted to the league for approval. All of this is exploding right now. And you know what I love? I love Jeremy Reisman. That's what I love, because I like what he has done for us on prideofdetroit.com. Tracking not just every Lions story, not just every Lions player who might be a free agent or a free agent in the NFL that the Lions might want to bring in, but essentially everybody and everything. As a matter of fact, Jeremy Reisman, who joins us now right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, wrote, instead of staying glued to Twitter all day or refreshing the ESPN.com site, just park it right here at prideofdetroit.com. Every rumor, every player that comes in or scheduled, et cetera, will be updated right here on the website. Jeremy, that's a service, my man. You're providing to everybody. Hey. I really appreciate and respect that. How are you?
I'm doing well. You know, everything's connected in some sort of way. So every move, in indirectly or directly, impacts the Lions. So I think not only Lions fans will be appreciative of that tracker, but just about anybody.
I think you're right. I really do. I'm looking through it, and you guys have been doing great work. Now, here's the question. You're going to talk to me for 15 minutes, and you're not going to be able to update everything that's going on. Do you have somebody somebody on the site right now covering your back?
I'll try to type quietly. How about that?
Well, you listen, if you need to sound out the words, because it's hard to speak one thing and type something else, by all means, go ahead and tell us right here on live radio if you've got an update for us. All right, let's dive into this, Jeremy. Thanks again. We talked a little bit about the Browns. They have been, of course, very active in the last few days, agreeing to a bunch of trades, signing a couple of free agents or agreeing to those. And now we want to go to the Detroit side of things, obviously. You know, you mentioned names like Richard Sherman and DeMarco Murray, proving that the Lions were not going to remain quiet forever. Of course, we know Richard Sherman has already now agreed to a deal. He was kind of, according to what I was told, or actually not what I was told, what I read and heard, Jeremy, is that Richard Sherman came to Detroit, talked to Matt Patricia, didn't fly there necessarily, but talked to Detroit and said, hey, you know, here's what I've got from the 49ers. Are you interested in doing better than that? I'll come and play for you. And the word was that he was told, no, that's too rich for our blood. We don't want to be a part of that. Is that accurate as far as you know?
That's what I also read on SportsIllustrated.com. They had a report about that. It's interesting, too, because a lot of people point to that Richard Sherman deal as, you know, he was acting as his own agent, and a lot of people thought maybe he didn't do such a good job. He kind of, there are a lot of incentives built into that contract, let's say, and if he doesn't reach some of those incentives, it could actually end up being a pretty nice deal for the 49ers, but apparently the Lions weren't serious enough to match that.
How do you feel about that? You know, it is a risky thing. It's a risky thing for the Niners, you know, because you're right. Joe Thomas, among other people, who made news today by retiring after 11 years in the NFL, went on Twitter, as I'm sure you saw, and crushed Richard Sherman, saying, dude got crushed in his contract by the Niners. That's what happens when you egotistically say, I can do anything an agent can do, and you don't want to give up 4%. You end up negotiating a bad deal. But there is risk here on all sides, because he is coming off of an Achilles tear, which is huge and very, very hard to come back from. He is 30 now, and receivers generally who are, you know, 23 and 24 are increasing in their speed. And when you're 30, you're decreasing in yours. Will you be the same great cover corner you've always been? So was that really the story here? Was it not necessarily the money, but maybe they just didn't think with the injury and his age that he could be what he has always been?
That's kind of what you have to think what happened there, because Lions also aggressively pursued Malcolm Butler and missed out on him. So
yeah.
Lions were clearly looking to get a big cornerback in this year's free agency and didn't get it. And it is kind of surprising to me that they didn't accept Sherman's deal or match it in Detroit. But it's hard to know without the specifics of, you know, the medical check. It's hard to know with the full breakdown of Sherman's deal, which I haven't quite seen yet. So it's an interesting situation. I'd love to be in the Lions, you know, war room to see exactly why they passed on it. But I am a little bit surprised that they didn't go for it.
Now let's talk about Butler as well, since you're on that. You noted, I'm looking at Mondays now, Malcolm Butler, Lions reportedly in a two-team race with the Texans for Butler, and then we go to Tuesday and your update of everything free agent-wise, agreed to a five-year $61 million deal with the Titans. Was that one more money-related? Because Butler is obviously younger. Was that just too much money, or did he prefer the Titans over the Lions for competitive reasons?
I think the report there, there isn't anything concrete. Obviously, sure. On Monday he was in a two-team race with the Lions and the Texans. On Tuesday, he signs with the Titans. So, obviously, some reports out there, not so accurate. But you have to think that if it was an even deal, that Butler would probably choose to rejoin Matt Patricia, who he had worked with his entire career as the defensive coordinator over there with the Patriots.
Sure.
So, in this case, I think it just has to be a case of money. The Lions didn't have too much cap space at the time, although I'm sure we're going to talk about it in the future. They just released Eric Ebron, freeing up a whole bunch of cap space. Over $12 million a year for Butler is quite a bit. That would actually make him the most expensive cornerback on the roster, which is surprising because Darius Slay, in my opinion, is the better player. And I don't think the Lions were willing to overpay for Malcolm Butler.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And it really does speak to the money aspect, I mean, of the actual question. If he's looking at Lions and Texans and suddenly signed somewhere else, the Titans must have blown the other two out of the water with that offer. And quickly, I'm sure Houston and Detroit said, okay, if you're going to give them that, then have them. We can't do that, and that certainly makes some sense. Let's talk about some of the losses that we already know. From the Lions, because they had several guys. And by the way, what do you make, not just signing from a free agent standpoint, with the decision to release Eric Ebron? We know that he kind of had a little bit of a tumultuous time with the fans and everything else last season, but he got better, I thought, as the season drew to a close, was much more consistent, was making some plays, and then he gets released. What do you make of that?
I'm still shook, to be honest. It was very surprising to me. I think it wouldn't have been surprising to see him get traded. He'd been the source of trade rumors basically ever since the trade deadline in 2017, and then things picked up again during the combine when all the teams were together. Mm-hmm. And that would make sense if the Lions were, you know, to get some sort of compensation for him, but releasing him outright means essentially they didn't get any offers for him, and $8.25 million was too much of a cap hit for what Ebron's worth. I can agree to that, but the Lions have essentially no options at tight end. The best tight ends on the free agency market have already been claimed. Their own guys. They have Michael Roberts, who is a Toledo guy, I'm sure you know.
Sure, yeah.
And just that's about it. They lost Darren Fells already to free agency. He went to the Browns.
He goes to the Browns, right, yeah.
Yeah, so essentially the Lions are going to have to go bargain bin shopping for a tight end or draft one in this year's draft, and I don't know, the $8.25 million, they're going to have to spend that in some sort of outrageous way for me to get behind this sort of move, because I think the Lions should have bit the bullet there, swallowed the $8.25 million, and had Eric Ebron for one more year, because, as you said, he was turning things around in 2017. He was actually one of the top five most productive tight ends after the bye week.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, it seems like any time he dropped one, obviously the fans get on you for that. And if it becomes consistent, you're going to have that problem. But he really, I mean, he was outspoken about it, too, how much he did not want to be in front of those fans if that's how they were going to treat him, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not surprised that there's a parting of the ways. But like you, I'm a little surprised that no compensation at all. They could not work a trade for anybody or with him with anybody. So you end up just releasing him outright right before the start of the league year. I'm a little surprised, too. Jeremy Reisman is our guest. We're talking Lions. We're talking about targeted free agency positions now that the league year has begun, potential trade ops. We're talking about losses. DJ Hayden gone as well to the Jaguars. Jeremy mentioned Darren Fells. The tight end goes to the Browns on a three-year deal. And, of course, Haloti Ngata is gone as well. He's going to the Eagles, not confirmed until, of course, today or at some point this afternoon slash evening. And Jim Kushlin wants to dive into this, too. Jimmy, go ahead.
Yeah, let's go to one of those positions where the Lions so far, at least yesterday and today, have been relatively active. They bring back Nick Ballore, the linebacker, and also bring in two others, Devin Kennard, three-year, $18.75 million. 2 years, $7.75 million for a Christian Jones. Break down what the Lions' overall linebacking core looks like now, because I know that's one of the places they wanted to add.
Yeah, it's a big improvement. I mean, you look at the at this point last year, the Lions had just released DeAndre Levy. They basically had no one back there except for Tahir Whitehead. Whitehead's likely gone this year because of all these additions, but I think adding Devon Kennard, along with, you're talking about Jalen Reeves-Maybin and Jared Davis, the two rookies from last year, coming back, hopefully progress a little bit in their game. And like you said, Christian Jones coming in. Now the Lions have a good set of four linebackers that can come in and play a variety of roles. That's the one thing that I think we're going to hear a lot about the guys that the Lions end up signing, is how versatile they are. So Devin Kennard is a guy who can drop back in coverage. He's a guy that's a good run stuffer. And then he's also a guy that can put his fingers in the ground and basically act like a defensive end. He's one thing that I think the Lions have failed to get in their linebackers as of recently is a pass rusher. You know, the one guy that they maybe had that had those sort of skills was Kyle Van Noy, and they ended up shipping him over to Matt Patricia. So now Matt Patricia has his quote-unquote Kyle Van Noy and Devin Kennard. And then Christian Jones is more of a guy who's a coverage guy. He'll probably play in the interior if the Lions have a 3-4 look. And then he also brings some special team skills. So I think in just over a year, the Lions have done a really, really good job at improving their linebacking core. But the rest of the defense is what I think a lot of Lions fans are worried about, especially that defensive line right now.
What are they going to do about the running back position? Is this going to be addressed in the draft, or is there somebody they can target in free agency?
Well, based on what we've heard so far, certainly seems like the Lions have a type in a running back, and that type is a 30-plus-year-old who's basically been pretty productive their entire career. They're bringing in Frank Gore today, reportedly. They've already brought in DeMarco Murray. They lost out on him, but they brought in Jonathan Stewart as well. It sounds like the Lions are going to sign a veteran running back, and particularly one that can pick up those short yardage situations, you know, very physical style running back. But I would be surprised if that's their only move. It really seems like things are lining up for them to add a rookie in this year's draft, and it's a deep draft. So I think you see them pick up a veteran guy who can hopefully teach this rookie, you know, how to pass block, how to catch, how to run in the NFL. And then you kind of see some of those bottom tier guys on the Lions roster, your Zach Zenners, your Dwayne Washington. None of those guys are safe, essentially, at this point, I would say.
We're talking to Jeremy Reisman, Pride of Detroit.com. NFL league year has now officially started about 27 minutes ago, and teams are free to sign free agents, consummate trades, et cetera. But we're also looking ahead to the draft. Just since you brought that up, and I agree with you, it is a deep draft, and there are a lot of opportunities to put running backs or to get running backs there that can, you know, if they don't, let's say they don't necessarily get one of these guys, the Murrays or the I forgot who else you said they had brought, Frank Gore. If they don't get one of these guys, how soon do they look for that running back? Is that something they would do with their first round pick, or do they have to go defense there? You know, given some of the linebackers they just took, there's still an opportunity to improve at defensive end. What do you see them doing early in the draft?
Yeah, in terms of running back, I think regardless of whether they pick up a veteran guy, they need to target a running back in the first three rounds just to get some competition in there, some interesting.
Right, but if they don't get one of the veterans, though, I'm asking, you know, does that increase that need? Do they, you know, like if they get, for example, if they get a Gore or if they get a guy like Murray or something, then maybe you can wait until three, you know, to grab one. But if they don't, maybe it's a little more pressing. We've got to get the best guy we can at number 20 overall in the first round. Is that something they would do?
I certainly think it's in play there. I don't think it's that necessary. The thing with running back is I just don't know if there's that big of a drop-off, if there's going to be that big of a drop-off in talent between rounds one and three, because the draft class is so deep. So a lot of people are talking Darius Geis at number 20, and I certainly think that's in play at this point. But I wouldn't be surprised for them to wait until maybe Rashad Penny in the second or third. It's just kind of a matter of preference and a matter of who else the Lions like when they're on the clock there at number 20 overall. I definitely think defensive line right now is a more pressing need, but, you know, obviously things still, there are a lot of things to still shake out with, free agency. So we'll see, but I would definitely think number 20, at 20 overall, running back is definitely in play with or without the addition of a veteran running back.
We're talking to Jeremy Reisman, PrideOfDetroit.com, about the Lions' needs as the league year has begun, free agency, trades, and, yes, of course, looking ahead to the draft. Jim Cushman, go ahead.
And let's go back to something on the defense. You know, you're talking about the defensive line is something, and I think that's very true, that Lions fans might be concerned about for what it's worth. As we, you know, recap real quick, Haloti, not a most likely, it looks like, gone. To the champs. Thank you. And there's some other things in play on the line. Can you give us any names that they're rumored to be targeting for that defensive front?
There honestly hasn't been one rumor at all about them signing a defensive lineman. The one guy that they were apparently interested in, Bo Allen from the Eagles, he's signing with the Buccaneers. So at this point, there's nothing. The one thing that people are definitely interested about, though, is a reunion in Ndamukong Suh. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but the Lions did just clear up over $8 million in cap space by releasing Eric Ebron. And a lot of people think, myself included, that you only make a move like that if you have a big contract waiting to be signed. And I'm not saying it's Ndamukong Suh. It could also be someone like Dontari Poe. There are a couple names out there, but I'm glued to Twitter right now just to see if the Lions have something up their sleeves, because I think something is coming, but I can't put my finger on what exactly it is, and I'm secretly hoping it's a defensive lineman.
That's interesting. I want to ask you about some of the other moves that have been made, or, you know, of course, in the tampering period, rumored to be on their way to being finalized now that the league year has begun, including, obviously, the biggest name, Kirk Cousins. How big of a deal is his guaranteed three-year, $84 million contract? He passes Matthew Stafford. He passes Jimmy Garoppolo in the highest average per year figure, and it's all guaranteed, something that the league has been so hesitant to do for anybody pretty much forever. Because of production drop-off or, more importantly, injury, they don't guarantee contracts. If he goes out and breaks both legs in week one and then, you know, tears a rotator cuff when he comes back in his throwing shoulder and can never throw another touchdown pass, he's guaranteed $84 million from the Minnesota Vikings. How huge is that, and how big of a deal do you think it will be when and other guys negotiating?
It's an interesting question. I don't really get the sense that it's going to change everyone. I don't think teams are willing to do that with their quarterbacks. And it's interesting that the Vikings of all teams did that, because their quarterbacks have been notorious for getting injured over the past 2 or 3 years. So it's a pretty surprising
move.
It's also
interesting to me, Jeremy, because the guy that they're letting go to Denver, Case Keenum, had a better year than Kirk Cousins did in virtually every statistic and has proven he can win in the playoffs, something that Kirk Cousins has never done.
It's a fair point to make. I argue that Kirk Cousins basically gives them more options for an offense. I feel like the Vikings' passing offense was very limited with Case Keenum there, but kudos to the Vikings coaches for developing an excellent offense around him to kind of work with those limitations. But now they'll have more options. Now they can kind of spread it out a little bit more, maybe not rely on the running game quite as much. Everything is fascinating what the Vikings did with Kirk Cousins. And they have reason to be excited, because I think he does give them an extra push in 2018. It's going to change the whole format of their team, though. And maybe not this year, but starting in 2019, they're going to have some defensive players that they're going to have to try to fit under the cap, and I'm not sure they're going to be able to. So we might see Kirk Cousins' contract essentially chip away at the Vikings defense, and that has been the identity of that team for years now.
With that negative impact, that repercussion of that contract, because I was going to ask you, at least for now going into 2018, does this now become the Vikings division to lose? You know, we've kind of looked at this for a while as being you know, Green Bay's division, and the Lions and the Vikings are chasing while the Bears kind of founder, and now the Bears seem to have found their guy. They've settled on Mitch Trubisky, obviously, as they got rid of Mike Glennon. But, I mean, are the Vikings now the class of the division?
Yeah, and I think they have been. A lot of people don't give them the credit for last year because Aaron Rodgers got, you know, his shoulder hurt. But at the same time, I think the Vikings.
That's a pretty big game
changer. Oh, it absolutely is. But the Vikings have a much deeper roster on both sides of the ball before he went down, and obviously after he went down as well. I mean, this they went what 13-3.
Yes.
You know, even if you hand them two losses to the Packers with Aaron Rodgers in the game, that's still an 11-5 team. So this is a really solid roster. It got better with Kirk Cousins added. The question is how long they can stay on top. And like I just mentioned, Kirk Cousins' contract might affect them in the long term.
And that's the reason why I kind of asked, are they the team to beat in it? You know, you think, well, yeah, they were 13-3, but they came up on people last year. They weren't expecting to be that. The Packers were expected to be, but now you're playing from out in front. Now you've added, not only did you go to the NFC Championship game, you've added Kirk Cousins, $84 million. Everybody is going to be gunning for you, and it's a little different playing, and attacking a division, basically. Knowing that you are the ones that are targeted and the expectations are much higher, and especially on Kirk Cousins. You know, he gambled on himself. He was willing to do the tag thing twice and then go ahead and make this deal guaranteed $84 million. I have to say anything short of a Super Bowl in these 3 years, and I mean a Super Bowl win in these 3 years with Kirk Cousins, will be viewed as being we didn't get our investments worth.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's a risk, but it's one that I think Vikings fans are willing to make right now just because they were so close last year. It's not like they could have gotten Case Keenum back on a cheap deal. Basically every Vikings quarterback that was on that roster last year is getting paid this offseason. So it's interesting that they decided to land Kirk Cousins. It wasn't what I expected to happen. But now that it happened, yeah, the Vikings are the front runners in the NFC North, maybe in the entire NFC to make the Super Bowl next year. And if they don't do it, then yeah, it's a disappointment. You could even call it a bad move if they don't do it. But, they're being very aggressive there in Minnesota, and it's hard not to be at least a little bit jealous of that.
As you write and edit for PrideOfDetroit.com, obviously you're focusing on the Lions and also, you know, Minnesota and other teams in the division. But just real quick, we're going over to the AFC side. My goodness, talk about a fleeing of New England and the Patriot way. Danny Amendola is gone. The big tackle who went to the gone. Deion Lewis gone. Malcolm Butler gone. There are five or six names that have been prominent players for them over the last few years who are leaving. Are they fleeing Bill Belichick and the Patriot way, or is this just the money is out there in bigger numbers in other places, and we'll go wherever we can to make the last dollar?
I think this is kind of standard operating procedure with the Patriots. They don't really like to give a lot of their players a second contract after their rookie year. They like to get those young, cheap guys, get them for all they're worth, and then move on and do it all over again with new guys. I don't think this is anything, getting out of the Belichick tree or anything like that. I don't know why you would ever want to leave New England if possible. You're basically guaranteed at least an AFC Championship appearance. I understand
some,
that a lot of people
some were
think,
suggesting earlier today, Jeremy, just to throw it at you, because I'm sure you're too busy working on your own stuff to watch TV like I was. But some are suggesting that what Belichick did in the Super Bowl to Malcolm Butler rubbed a whole lot of people the wrong way. A guy who has played 96% of the snaps in his time in New England, and he was benched, essentially, allowed to play one special teams play, was only told right after the national anthem, by the way, you're not playing. And a lot of people think that rubbed a lot of Patriots the wrong way, and it certainly did other players around the league, if you remember Twitter at the time. Some are saying that's why they want out of New England, because they just feel like, hey, if he can do that to Malcolm Butler, nobody is safe. He can do whatever the heck he wants to me as well.
It's an argument to be made. I don't know if there's any real proof of that. There's definitely proof that there were players upset at the time, for certain. That makes sense, that players would be upset. Teammates would be upset. Players around the league would be upset. That all makes sense. But when it comes down to negotiating time and money's being thrown around, I'm not sure that has that much of an impact on things, because you look at Bill Belichick's track record, and I don't know how you wouldn't want to be a part of that team, regardless. I mean, rings speak louder than than money sometimes for some players.
I agree. Well, except for their own free agents when that money.
Right. I guess that's true.
Yeah, because, you know, if you're Danny Amendola, you know, you've had an injury-riddled career. You've also had some very good success. Your best success clearly has been with Tom Brady in New England, but he's 30 or 31, and he's coming off of injuries. This is probably his last chance to cash in on the biggest contract he can get. He's not going to take less to stay chasing rings with Brady when he knows he's not going to. I'm just surmising here. He's not going to have another chance after this contract he signs us up to cash in on a bigger one. He's got to take everything he can. If he's got to go play in Timbuktu, you know, at this point, it's his last big contract. You're going to have to do that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's what a lot of these players are looking to do, is to cash in one last time, because, you know, even players going on their second contract, your NFL career can be very, very short. Anything can happen, whether it's injury or just getting, you know, cashed out of the market. That's the entire point of free agency for a lot of these guys. It's to really cash in for what could possibly be your last time. You never really know. And so I don't blame any of these players, whether they're leaving the Patriots or joining the Patriots, and getting whatever they can, because their careers are short.
Yeah, no question about it. That's one of the reasons why, you know, between the short career and the fear of injury, why the guaranteed contract situation has been what it has been. But maybe a break in that now because of Kirk Cousins, and time will only tell. All right, Jeremy, we'll let you get back to updating the website. You've got a great thing going there at prideofdetroit.com. If you're looking for kind of a free agency tracker and a player movement tracker, as Jeremy just said, rather than waiting and watching all of the different teams on Twitter, just get on prideofdetroit.com. Look for Jeremy's feed there. He is updating it constantly, even while he does live radio hits like this one. Jeremy, thanks so much, my friend. Great job, as always. We'll catch up again soon.
Sounds good, man.
Thank you, Jeremy. Jeremy Reisman, prideofdetroit.com. You got to check that website out. If you're a Lions fan, you probably already know. It's a great place to be. It's really a great cumulative site, I suppose, to get all of the different news and notes from around the league, but especially as they impact the Detroit Lions. Okay, it's 4:40. We got a bottom-of-the-hour local sports center coming your way. It's a little bit late, as per usual, but that's okay. I'm sure Jim will have the latest on player movement and more as the league year is now officially underway 40 minutes ago. We can spend the last few minutes of the program talking with one another if you're ready to dial 866-240-1065. How do you feel about the Browns' moves? How do you feel about the Lions' moves? And that means moves they didn't make. You know, re-signing players who have left to go elsewhere, including Don Carey, as we mentioned, Haloti Ngata, Fells, the tight end, going to Cleveland and on down the line, the cutting of Eric Ebron. So a lot of moves made and not made by the two teams that we cover, and we'd love to hear from you on them at 866-240-1065. Right back after this.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. We are indeed trying to kind of follow all of the free agent player movement trackers, including the one from Pride of Detroit with Jeremy Reisman, obviously. But looking at ESPN's as well, and just a couple of notes. Tyrann Mathieu, the Honey Badger, has been released by the Arizona Cardinals after he refused to take a pay cut. He was due $5.75 million of his 2018 salary, and an $8 million of his 2019 salary were about to become guaranteed. He was asked to take a pay cut to stay with the Cardinals. He declined. Oh, by the way, he was also due a $5 million roster bonus on March 16th. So that's 2 days from now. So, boy, that you can see the reason why. He's about to make $18.75 million guaranteed by the Cardinals. He declined to take a pay cut, and so, therefore, they released him. So that's a pretty doggone good safety. It's a guy, you know, one of the best nickel defenders in the league, a guy who was in the conversation. The problem is he had a lot of injuries, certainly. Finished three of his five seasons on injured reserve due to a torn ACL and an LCL in 2013 and then an ACL in 2015. But the best year of his career just 2 years ago, or now 3 years ago since it's 2018 and 2015, he was in the conversation for Defensive Player of the Year, first-team All-Pro and Pro Bowl that season. Can he get all of that back? Well, we'll see. I don't know who's looking for safeties, but that's interesting. I could tell you who could use a little bit of help. In the defensive secondary would be the Steelers. Just, you know, the teams we kind of cover a lot, Jim. You know, we kind of know the strengths and weaknesses of the Lions and the Browns and the Steelers and some others to a degree because of the conferences and divisions that they're in. But the Steelers secondary has been one of their Achilles heels as they lose to Tom Brady every year. That might be something there, but I don't know how much money they have to spend under the cap. Couple of other notes, and I'm looking again. We're just kind of keeping fresh, or I keep refreshing the NFL feed to see what other moves have made. The Patriots are going to re-sign their running back, Rex Burkhead. They've lost a lot of other players, as I mentioned a few minutes ago. Deion Lewis is leaving. Danny Amendola is leaving. Who else? Malcolm Butler is leaving. Their best tackle is gone. Let's see. The Ravens have cut wide receiver Jeremy Maclin. After once, that's another receiver. That's another guy the Browns could look at.
Yeah.
You know, because we were just talking to Dennis. He's saying, you know, you don't really need a new number one. But if you're looking for a guy who can be a number two or a three, a contributor, Jarvis Landry might be good enough to be a number one. And I say that instead of Josh Gordon only because of, you know, we know the story about ability. Josh Gordon's biggest question mark is his availability. And
Before you go any farther, yeah. And I mentioned that in the Sports Center among the mountain of moves the Browns have made.
Yeah,
that one might be flying under the radar, but $790,000 because of the exclusive rights free agent to keep Josh Gordon for one more year, given his history. I am more than fine, honestly, with that and him staying in Cleveland for that.
Yeah, less than $1 million.
Exactly.
That's it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Under that circumstance, I would never give him a longer contract until he proves to me he can stay clean for a full calendar year, not just 16 games of a league year, but a full calendar year without any relapses or embarrassing incidents, et cetera, that would lead me to believe that sooner or later he's going to screw things up for me and make me have to change my offense to adjust without him. Then I would consider that. But for now, you're right. Just if it's less than $1 million, go for it. Jeremy Maclin, though, as I said, a cap casualty for the Ravens. They gained $5 million in space by cutting him. He did have his worst year with the Ravens last year, just 40 catches for 440 yards. But, of course, he had been very productive prior to that. Jeremy Maclin is another guy that the Browns could probably get on the cheap if they wanted to continue to upgrade that. You know, remember, that position has just been a disaster for 4 years. I mean, just an absolute disaster. Not just the Josh Gordon situation, but obviously the, you know, guys that they drafted and hope to get some production out of.
Corey Coleman, who I'm hoping is not long for this team.
No, he's a bust. Obviously, Kenny Britt was a bust. They have nobody. Jarvis Landry is clearly the best that they have now of guys with, you know, clear record, if you will.
I mean, see what you're trying to say, yes.
Yeah, and he's produced more than Josh Gordon, even though Josh Gordon was at one time. And can you believe, Jim, 6 years ago, it was 2012. At one time, he was the league leader in receiving yards.
Yep.
That's crazy to think it was that long ago. Jarvis Landry, on the other hand, has had 2 1,000-plus yard seasons receiving in the last 3 years, and 900-plus in the other one. And he's second, I think, only to Antonio Brown in receptions over the last 4 years combined. So he's clearly the number one receiver on the Browns now. If Gordon is there, then he's a 1A or a 2 type of guy. And then you've got to see if you can add, you know, a Jeremy Maclin or a Terrell Pryor or something like that. I'm just bringing up Maclin because I just saw that news.
Right.
We are literally kind of refreshing this as we go.
That's so true on a day like this.
Well, you have to. You really do. Eric Ebron with the Lions again hitting the market. Jim, I asked Jeremy Reisman about that. I have to admit, I was a little surprised and a little disappointed that Matt Patricia would make, well, not just Matt Patricia, but Bob Quinn, but would make that move because despite all of the fans coming down on Ebron last year, he was productive. He only had 18 catches for 195 yards over the first 8 games, leading everybody to, you know, he's getting booed every time Matthew Stafford targeted him or threw him the ball.
Right.
But over the final 8 games, 35 catches for 379 and 3 touchdowns, including a 10-catch, 94-yard game in a win over Tampa Bay that they needed to have, a win they needed to have to stay in the playoff race. Eric Ebron got better and better, and I think he's going to cash in someplace. With somebody who needs a tight end who's going to look and say, hey, that guy's productive. He had a really bad hostile-type situation in Detroit, but he can play.
Yeah, and I think that is very true, and that's why I think, and I'm not sure, you know, what to think about this, but in Jeremy's post about that specific one, Eric Ebron earlier, mentioning that it saves $8.25 million of the cap hit,
yeah,
which leads me to believe, especially given, even though he's more of a blocking guy, Fell's coming to the Browns now, not much out there at this moment, I have to believe that this, from a Lions internal point of view, was first and foremost saving money, more than anything else.
Like it. Yeah, it does. It sounds like it from a cap perspective. It really does. There just aren't a lot of, you know, ton of tight ends out there, to be honest with you, that can be added to improve your lineup. Jimmy Graham, of course, is going to Green Bay in order to make cap room for him. Jordy Nelson was the casualty. So, you know, we talked about the NFC North and, you know, the Lions' place in it and the Vikings, of course, adding Kirk Cousins. So we cannot dismiss what Green Bay is doing and has done. They lose one of their all-time greats, Jordy Nelson, but they do add Jimmy Graham. So that's a tight end that's off the board. And I don't know too many others, really, who are, you know, as skilled or perhaps have as much potential to put big numbers up as Eric Ebron does, at least based on what he did in the final eight games. You know, you if you take those last eight games and prorate that out for an entire season, you'll mm-hmm. take a tight end with 70 catches or 75 catches and six touchdowns. No question about it. There aren't a ton of those that really do that now.
No, there's not. And on the Packers thing real quick, the thing that jumps out at me is something the national guys, you know, have been talking about, which is that they didn't really even ask Rodgers or anything about it, and that was his always favorite target. And the notation, the theme I've been hearing from national guys on that subject with the Jordy Nelson out thing is, you guys, you better not anger Aaron Rodgers too much. Is
well,
kind of the
you know,
theme
I
got from that.
I guess, and in fact, not just guess, you're right. I mean, it's true. I don't necessarily like that about him. I think Aaron Rodgers has been too quick to publicly criticize his team for making moves without consulting him as if he was indeed, you know, the franchise. And while he is the franchise, you know, in terms of his status as a quarterback, he doesn't get to make every decision. And his, you know, Aaron Rodgers to me is becoming a little bit more of a publicly recognized prima donna than some other guys, including Tom Brady. Tom Brady has some of his favorite targets stripped from him every year, some of the great running backs that give him a great balance in his offense, stripped from him every single year, and all he does is take the replacements and turn them into all pros with his own greatness. Aaron Rodgers has somebody stripped from him, and he publicly whines and complains about it. How dare you do that without my say-so? So,
that's true, though.
Just being real.
No,
just,
that's all true.
You know, real talk here. It's something that does not endear Aaron Rodgers to me. Okay, that's it. Music is playing. Obviously, the league year is now just about 1 hour old. There's tons of news that's going to come in tonight. We will react to it tomorrow right here on the Extravaganza. You'll probably have a little bit more of it coming up on Drive Time next, so stay where you are at ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, and we'll see you on tomorrow's Extravaganza.